Welcome once again to our program on intelligent design and biological evolution, which has been hotly debated, especially in the last decade or so, even though it was debated long before that too. And particularly in the United States, where the intelligent design people have been trying to do something to counterbalance the idea of atheistic evolution being taught in so many public schools. And we've spent 11 programs, and this is our 12th and final program. And as usual, our wonderful guest is Ron Eldred, who teaches at John Paul II Catholic High, teaches world history and American history, as well as a course on the Bible. I'm your host, Father Larry Moran, at Pastor Emeritus of St. Patrick Catholic Church here at 19th and Poplar in Terre Haute, Indiana. Ron, we were up to where the Pope, who had had many sessions with some of his best students on various topics every year, and the last session they had apparently, and you mentioned that the book hadn't been translated yet from German, but it was named Creation and Evolution in English and was published on, I believe, April the 11th. Maybe we can say some things about this book, because they chose as their topic specifically this whole creation and evolution debate that has continually raged perhaps in the church. Not maybe as much as now, but since the time of St. Augustine, it's been talked about. And we've talked about the church's position and what people have said about the intelligent design, and particularly that the problem for us as Catholics and many other persons is that evolution or neo-Darwinism tends to say you can explain everything without a creator, all of creation, even though it's complex and so wonderfully designed. And this, of course, the church cannot accept. So say something about this book that at least you know about, Creation and Evolution. I believe it's Schöpfung und Evolution.
Yes, that it hasn't been translated yet into English, at least not to my knowledge, and I checked back, it's been 2 or 3 months ago, and I suspect it probably hasn't been done yet.
It was the product of these discussions with young students.
The meeting was held back on September the 2nd and 3rd, 2006, okay, at the Pope's summer residence at Castel Gandolfo, and Benedict, Joseph Ratzinger, when he was professor at Regensburg University in Germany, he started holding these meetings with some of his best students in the summer. And in fact, one of them is at least one of them is an American, Father Joseph Fessio.
Oh, Joseph Fessio.
Yes, who is a Jesuit, I might add.
And still is.
Still is, and he's the head of the Ignatius Press, plus he was chancellor at Ave Maria University. He's a fine theologian and a scholar. And I'm not sure whether he was at that meeting or not. I suspect that he probably was. But there were leading scientists that gave talks, and then these talks were discussed about the matter of evolution and intelligent design. One of the talks was given by Cardinal Christoph Schönborn, who we talked a lot about during this series.
And who is sort of the spokesman, yes, unofficially.
He's not a scientist, but he's an eminent theologian. In fact, he was editor of the Catechism of the Catholic Church.
And we're going to quote some beautiful quotations from the Catechism of the Catholic Church this program.
So getting to the book, the articles were written by these cardinal and the other three presenters there. Plus, I understand Benedict himself wrote an article, which would be probably a chapter.
I'm sure you'll get the book as soon as it's published.
As soon as
they
get it in English, yes. And I imagine there's an editor who wrote, you know, introduction and editorial chapter and this, that, and the other. But whatever, the book actually came out in April of 2007. Came out this year. I read that the Pope took an active part in the discussions. And in the book and the article he wrote, he praises scientific progress but warns that evolution poses philosophical questions that science itself, by itself, can't answer. And I understand that he doesn't endorse creationism or intelligent design, as some were hoping that he would, anyway. But I think he already made that pretty clear in other documents that we've looked at in this series, and so I don't know why they would have thought that he would have done that. But instead, it is said that he, quote, cautions that science and philosophy must engage in their respective inquiries in such a way that faith is not excluded, and claims that the theory of evolution is not a complete, scientifically proven theory, which, of course, this is what Pope Pius XII had said back in Humana Generis way back in 1950. The National Center for Science Education reported in an article entitled The Latest on Evolution from the Pope that in the book, Benedict defended what is known as theistic evolution, the view held by Roman Catholic, Orthodox, and mainline Protestant churches that God created life through evolution, and religion and science need not clash over this. So, again, I haven't had an English translation to read, but this is what someone who can read the book in German.
That's always been the position of this church.
Yes.
We've got to get God at the beginning, and then how it all happened, science can argue about that.
Yeah, the Bible doesn't tell us how, it just tells us what.
Okay.
Moreover, Reuters news agency reported that the Pope denied using a God of the Gaps argument. We spent part of one session talking about that God of the Gaps, that sees divine intervention wherever science cannot explain something. And he is reported as saying, in regard to this, it's not as if I wanted to stuff the dear God into these gaps. He is too great to fit into such gaps, ended quote.
He's got a good sense of humor. Okay. Let's talk a little bit about the Catechism of the Catholic Church, because the ordinary person, Catholic or non-Catholic, can look up in the back in the index about what the Church teaches about almost anything. And so here's some good comments that you've culled out of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. What, if anything, does the Church say about evolution?
Well, keep in mind now, it's Cardinal Schönborn that we've talked about so much in this series, who was the editor and wrote much of the Catechism of the Catholic Church. It doesn't say a lot, the Catechism, but what it does say is relevant. For example, it says that, quote, human intelligence is surely already capable of finding a response to the question of origins. The existence of God the Creator can be known with certainty through his works by the light of human reason. And then it goes on to say, we believe that God created the world according to his wisdom. It is not the product of any necessity whatever, nor blind fate or chance. So that's sort of indirectly a criticism of, you know, neo-Darwinism.
Read the last sentence again, because I think it helps ordinary people to kind of focus on what the Catechism says about evolution, even though it's not a whole lot.
We believe that God created the world according to his wisdom. It is not the product of any necessity whatever, nor a blind fate or chance, end of quote. As I said, implicitly it's rejecting the idea of neo-Darwinism and this
blind chance and
chance,
random selection.
Yes, and a random variation and natural selection.
Okay.
Elsewhere, the Catechism states that, quote, methodical research in all branches of knowledge, provided it is carried out in a truly scientific manner and does not override moral laws, can never conflict with faith, because the things of the world and the things of faith derive from the same God. The humble and persevering investigator of the secrets of nature is being led, as it were, by the hand of God, in spite of himself, for it is God, the conserver of all things, who made them what they are. End of quote. There, the catechism is quoting come from one of the documents of Vatican Council II there. In another place, the catechism states that, quote, "The question about the origins of the world and man has been the object of many scientific studies, which have splendidly enriched our knowledge of the age and dimensions of the cosmos, the development of life forms, and the appearance of man. These discoveries invite us to even greater admiration for the greatness of the Creator, prompting us to give Him thanks for all His works and for the understanding and wisdom He gives to scholars and researchers." And last, the Catechism states, this is in another place, quote, "The great interest accorded to these studies is strongly stimulated by a question of another order, which goes beyond the proper domain of the natural sciences. It is not only a question of knowing when and how the universe arose physically or when man appeared, but rather of discovering the meaning of such an origin." End of quote.
Okay, and that's a direct quotes, three simple but very helpful, I think, direct quotes from the Catholic Catechism of the Catholic Church, which you can buy in any bookstore, secular or religious, to be updated on the most recent teachings of the Catholic Church. Okay, as we're coming to the end of the series on intelligent design and biological evolution and the debate that is really stirred up, let's conclude by asking, should intelligent design be taught in the science classrooms in public schools? What is, if any, the Church's position?
Well, as we've been going through these topics in the last several sessions. We've sort of answered that question implicitly, but let's try to draw it out, to flesh it out, and get a little more explicit here. From what we have considered in this series, it appears to me that the Catholic Church leans toward the position that intelligent design is a philosophical or religious matter.
But that it is true.
That it is true, sure.
Okay.
And should be discussed primarily in philosophy or religion class. Oh, yes, as we spent part of a session talking about, just because something can't be seen with a telescope or through a microscope doesn't mean that it isn't true. The only science that uses a certain set of steps, a certain procedure, is itself not the only method in searching for truth. There are matters that are not perceivable. So when you're dealing with questions of, you know, why something happens or how something happens, things of that sort, sometimes it takes a matter of faith, it takes a more religious or philosophical answer. But again, like you said a while ago, that doesn't mean it isn't true.
Sure.
The consensus in the Church seems to be that intelligent design, as it exists in the United States, is more philosophical or religion in nature than scientific. And what I mean by the Church, there's not been any dogmatic statements or anything like that. There, you find numerous documents and speeches and this, that, and the other by leading people in the Church.
Like Cardinal Schönborn,
yes,
and Pope Benedict XVI.
And the Pope himself, and Pope John Paul the Second. To the extent that this is the Church's view of the matter, I agree with it. Although intelligent design, as sponsored by the Discovery Institute in this country, appears to have some scientific basis, especially statistical analysis, mathematical treatment, and that type of thing, it appears to me to use more of a logical and philosophical methodology rather than a strictly scientific method, as the majority of the scientific community defines science. Now, as we discussed in one of our sessions, the Discovery Institute appears to be trying to broaden the definition of science to include not only strictly the set of steps and the features that we talked about, but also to include essentially what would be more philosophical
reason itself could come to the conclusion of without even having the Bible.
And the thing is, they're wanting to include that. The problem is, they're wanting to include that in the ninth grade biology classroom, let's say, or other science classrooms. And I think the church would say, and has said, the Pope and Cardinal Schönborn himself said, it doesn't belong there, this idea of intelligent design, either philosophically or maybe even the method of science they're using in these people in intelligent design.
And I think the intelligent designers would say, okay, but there's no place else to put it. If there was someplace else to put what is completely reasonable, that there has to be a designer for the complex design, then we would be happy. But there's no place else that it would be allowed in a public school.
Yeah, I think that for the church to hold that intelligent design should be discussed primarily in philosophy or religion classes, it's fine for Catholic and other Christian denominational schools. But that won't work in the secular public schools in this country where God has been completely banished. You know, that's why we have John Paul II Catholic High. So not only so the kids can get a good, you know, academic training, but all and good moral, you know, formation and things of that sort, but they can also learn the truth of the matter. They can not only learn, you know, material causation and efficient causation that we discussed in one of our
scientific matters.
Yes, but they can also learn formal causation and final causation and ultimate first causation. You know, God Himself. We can discuss those things in a ninth grade biology class if we want, and sometimes they do a little bit. But we teach the same biology. We don't teach any biology any different than what they do in the public schools. In history, we teach basically the same history, my history classes. But we do take as the theme of our history class, in fact, the title of the textbook is Christ the King, Lord of History, that the most important event that ever occurred in the history of the world is the Incarnation. In fact, we even recognize that. We divide our time, B.C. and A.D. Now, there are, we know, people trying to change that. But nonetheless, even they are still implicitly recognizing it, whether they like it or not. Call it what you want, but that's how it got started anyway.
Well, I think that's the advantage of John Paul II Catholic High, that people can learn the whole truth, and not just pieces of the truth.
Well, we can look at the same events. We look at the ancient civilizations. We look at the Greeks and the Romans and how all these. But all this is a part of God's plan, and we can very clearly show how these things are a part of God's plan. I mean, there was a reason that God made a covenant with Abraham at a certain time in history, and told him to ask him to go over to the land of Canaan, which 1,800 years later was going to be the center of the world, from which Christianity could much more easily spread. But lots and lots of things had to happen before that.
And often, even in a public history book, public school history book, it says hardly anything, if anything, about the birth of Jesus as being the most important event that ever happened in history.
I have a copy of the textbook they use in the local high schools here. And quite frequently, when we're talking about a certain topic using our textbook and other supplementary materials, I'll bring that textbook in and then we'll read and discuss what the text used in the secular public schools. And for the most part, like I tell the kids, I said, if we just use this book, it would be like I'm feeding you Pablum baby food. I said, you're just simply not getting, you know, the meat and the potatoes, you know, that you would get, the fullness of the truth that you would get in a classroom like this that we can do here in our school.
So there are great vacuums in the textbook that you're comparing with the textbook we're using.
Oh, yes. Well, I think the schools and the courts simply won't permit any discussion of philosophy or logic in any classroom. let alone the science classrooms that could lead to God in any way. In other words, as we discussed earlier in the series, since the 18th century, formal and final causes, let alone first causes, have not been considered a part of the explanation for the existence of things and their changes, that modern scientists consider only the material and efficient causes in causation because only they are perceivable. However, just because something can't be seen or tasted or touched or heard or smelled doesn't mean that it doesn't exist, and a knowledge of which is necessary to fully comprehend reality, the totality of reality. That could be even history, biology, or anything as far as that's concerned. Science isn't the only valid method of discovering the truth. Other methods, such as philosophy and logic, have proven over the centuries to account for unseen formal and final causes. And if these lead to God, well, so be it. Reality is more than a matter acted on by some force. In other words, there is more to causation than material and efficient causes. There must also be a plan, an organizing principle of all reality or being, and there must be a purpose for which things exist. In other words, there must also be formal and final causes to completely account for the causes of things, which we do, of course, in our world history class, our U.S. history class, our biology classes, or whatever. And, of course, we have religion classes where we can really get down into that kind of thing. And because formal and final causes are not quantifiable and perceivable by the senses, scientists exclude them from consideration in explaining the causes of things.
We talked about formal causes.
Yes.
Before being the blueprint,
yes,
by which a thing is made, and the final cause as the purpose for which it's made.
Yes.
And those have been, to a great extent, just eliminated. That there is no blueprint and there is no purpose for it.
The secularized public schools and the courts have completely banished the consideration of formal and final causes. They don't put it in those words, but that's what they've done. Not only in the science classroom, but also even from consideration in all courses. And I question whether or not the schools and the courts would even allow such topics to be considered in philosophy or logic courses if such courses existed in the public schools. And I think that's how secular and godless I believe our public schools have become. There exists no provisions whatsoever in public schools for the discussion of the ultimate questions that have perplexed humankind from the beginning, such as who we are and what is our purpose in life and what is our destiny and the like. At least they aren't permitted to discuss these and any other similar questions with reference to God. Any discussion of these topics receives strictly materialistic and relativistic answers, I think, for the most part, in the public schools.
And wasn't it Pope Benedict XVI who said the great crisis, I can't remember the exact word he used, the great crisis of our age is relativism, that there is no right or wrong. Each person is left, we kind of make up what I think is right or wrong, but there's no clear teaching that we found anywhere about what is right and wrong.
Well, that was a major theme of his inaugural address when he became the Pope.
Oh, he called it the dictatorship,
yeah,
of relativity.
That's right. That's what he did call it, yes.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
There's one more issue that I should mention before we finish our discussion. A point heavily emphasized by Cardinal Schönborn. To the extent that evolution as taught in the public schools has a fundamentally materialistic basis, that is the ultimate basis of reality as matter. That's what materialism is. It is not following scientific methodology itself, but is instead an ideology or a philosophy. Recall, this is Cardinal Schönborn's main criticism of what he calls Neo-Darwinism. Neo-Darwinian evolution as opposed to the genuinely scientific theory of evolution, which isn't inherently materialistic and anti-religious.
In fact, it has been made so.
It has been made so, and that's what he and the Pope have called neo-Darwinianism, the new Darwinianism.
Or evolutionism.
Yes, evolutionism, as opposed to theistic evolution, where, you know, it's believed and taught that God, well, maybe that's the way he did it. In fact, the church has always been comfortable. It's always been comfortable with the idea of theistic evolution. The idea that evolution could have been the way God created the material world, including human bodies. Yet the church insists that God creates the human soul from nothing at the moment of conception. And that's true. We don't know how long man has been on the earth. Some say that the Homo sapiens have been here 150,000 years or so. Well, if that's true, that's fine. But at some point, God would have had to have taken somebody and put in a human soul, and that was the first human
a spiritual soul, a thinking, intelligent being that could not have come from matter alone.
Again, that's a very gray, almost black area, you know, in terms of we don't know, you know, and for sure you can find some fossils somewhere down in Africa and make all kinds of inferences from it, whether you call her Lucy or whoever, whatever you call her, maybe it was just a little monkey. Maybe the bones they found were just a little monkey and not some little, human being, you know, sure. with a soul.
But from a faith viewpoint, the church anchors us in that teaching that God had to intervene when material matter are what was on the way to be an intelligent being, there was a direct creation of the soul.
And God was always involved and with it up to that time also.
Okay, in letting the process...
In letting the process that he had designed and set in motion, you know, work itself out. Again, we don't know that stuff. You can't put that under a microscope and telescope. You can only make all kinds of inferences from fossils and 100 other areas, you know, that this is probably or possibly how that it happened.
Sure.
But the public school system and the courts, I think, reflect the dominant ethos of a society, and secularism, materialism, relativism, and a half a dozen other ideologies, I think, are dominant in our societies. Therefore, I see very little hope for getting any consideration of intelligent design in the public schools of this country, even as philosophical and logical matters. And I think the main problem, as I see it, isn't so much that the school system is secular, materialistic, and relativistic, but that it is hostile toward religion and philosophy, at least a realist blend of philosophy.
Okay, well, that comes to our final conclusion of our 11th series on intelligent design and biological evolution, the debate that still rages on in our country and in other countries across Europe. Ron, I want to thank you for tremendous research you've given to this whole program. You've done an awful lot of blood, sweat, and tears into it, and I'm tremendously grateful for you sharing your wealth of knowledge with us. For now, we say, may God bless you always and in all ways.